Many don't believe that either the trumpets with melodious noise or the infernal din await us where the road ends. But most, I fancy, have discovered that to be born is to be exposed to delights and miseries greater than imagination could have anticipated. That the choice of ways at any crossroads may be more important than we think, and that shortcuts may lead to very nasty places.
And welcome back to the Pilgrims Podcast after a slightly longer than usual hiatus, though probably not up to our usual standards. This is actually our first Pilgrims Podcast on the road. We're coming to you from, where did we just pass?
Mile marker 140.7.
Yes. We're just coming up to Roanoke College now. But yeah, we're on the road. We just got back from Washington, D.C.
Heading south.
Yes. Yes, we are heading south. And we have been in D.C. over the weekend to go to the National Greek Exhibit.
It's the National Geographic Museum.
Well, the National Geographic Museum, which has an exhibit on the Greeks. So if we have slightly more sound issues than usual, then that is why, because we are in the car and recording on the way. But it's the weekend, so I happen to be in from school, and we kind of did a little bit of planning and got a movie from the library, took it to Washington with us and watched it, and we
road trip.
Yeah, we've been writing our questions on the road, and now we're going to record on the road. So, first road trip episode. And,
So if you hear my GPS talking to you in the background, that's what that's all about.
Yes, it's just add a little bit of atmosphere.
That's right.
You know that we're the real deal. We're not in the studio. Yes, our of course, normally when we're in our living room, crashed on the couch with a laptop. So, yeah, we're so professional. It's actually strange because now I'm at school and I have to record an article almost every week at the radio station. So I go in there and I plug in the password and and working with all this professional equipment, and I'm like, so strange. The audio sounds terrific. So. And I'm starting to work in the TV station too, so that ought to be fun. We're gonna do some video stuff over this next week, and I've been doing recording and all that's been fun. So that's what I've been doing at school. And
2 days ago, at about this very place, you know what happened?
What happened?
So we were heading north on I-81 as we approached Roanoke, Virginia.
Oh, yes, we were.
And what were we talking about?
Well, as we are prone to do, we were talking politics.
And what did we see? Behold, in the southbound lane opposite us.
As I was discussing with my brother whether or not one should vote for Trump, we saw, going the opposite direction,
His orangeness. And Pence-ness.
Yes, the supreme Pence-ness.
The orange, the Trump-Pence tour bus was heading south on I-81, just south of Roanoke.
Yeah.
There they were.
We were going the opposite direction. Ships in the night.
Yeah. So, that would have been cool if we were in the same, going the same direction.
Yeah.
That would have shattered them for a few miles. And got off and made small chat at the, small talk at the.
the rest stop.
Rest stop.
Yeah. I'm sure my brother would have had a lot to say to him.
Got our picture taken in front of the big, because they had their faces, Trump and Pence's faces, and, larger than life were on the side of the van. The bus.
Yep.
I don't know if he was really in there or not. Who knows?
Yeah, we didn't really see any...
could have been his doppelganger.
Any security people, but it could have been. Maybe he lent the bus to somebody.
That would be a pretty sad job to be Donald Trump's doppelganger.
Yeah, I mean...
Is that how you pronounce it?
Though it can't be as sad as being Hillary Clinton's body double.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, who would do that?
To their hair.
Anyway, we better get off politics. We'll get into trouble again. So, today we're going to be talking about Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which was a recommendation by Daryl a few weeks ago, a few podcasts ago, it's been more than weeks, but he mentioned watching Adam's Apples and said we should go watch Pride and Prejudice, and Zombies, which I'd heard of, I didn't really know a lot about, I, you know, just kind of immediately dismissed it as just going to be ridiculous, but I'd heard, but when I heard good stuff from Daryl, and then a friend of mine at school mentioned that she really enjoyed it, so I'm like, okay, well, what the heck, we'll try it out. So, we took it to Washington and watched it there, and if you know anything about Washington, then you'll know that zombies are not very out of place. Those that feed on the living do happen to live in Washington.
That's right. Eat brains.
Yeah, so.
Dollars.
Let's start out by kind of summarizing Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is pretty self-explanatory, but there are some details which are not immediately obvious. So, Elizabeth Bennet is one of five daughters of a Mr. Bennet who has been teaching his daughters to fight zombies because the zombie apocalypse has occurred, and even though the good people of England have managed to contain the zombies to a strip of land which surrounds London, they still have issues with them, and it seems like the zombies may or may not be coming back, thanks to some help, and nobody knows who's been helping them. But so everybody, of course, has to train to fight zombies because that's the new thing, and they either go to China or Japan to learn to fight zombies. And the Bennet girls went to China, and the upper class tend to go to Japan, so there's a little bit of a class distinction there. And so instead of doing knitting and all of the usual Regency hobbies, these girls spend their times with their knives and their fisticuffs training to fight the undead. Now, Mr. Darcy, of course, we all know Mr. Darcy is a zombie hunter, and he's a very kind of gruff and tough type who has seen many a zombie in his time, and he makes himself disagreeable by going to people's houses and trying to suss out zombies with his carrion flies. When of course they meet, they tend to conflict over how to deal with zombies and exactly when to take paranoia too far. And that pretty much explains it. Other than that, the beginning of the story, and as the story goes throughout, it's pretty similar to the plot of Pride and Prejudice. Lizzie and Mr. Darcy do not get along very well at first. The Bennets are trying to marry off their daughters. Mr. Bennet is very sarcastic. Mr. Collins turns up and is rather silly and is very admiring of Lady Catherine, who it turns out is a really quite tough zombie killing
machine.
Expert. Yes, yes. So, you know, it really doesn't quite work as well.
With an eye patch.
Yeah, with an eye patch. So, and then Mr. Bingley, he's around. There's not really much to say about him. That's pretty much it. Oh, Mr. Wickham, that's really the only part of the story which is fairly different from the way that Pride and Prejudice works itself out. It's that there's kind of a subplot with Mr. Wickham and, of course, the zombies, and that sort of plays itself out differently than any. And there's no connection to the other story in this. This is entirely original material, and that was kind of the bit that intrigued me the most, to be honest. It was exactly how they were kind of going to deal with that subplot. But we'll talk about that when we come to it. So let's start by talking about the gimmick itself, which you can't really escape talking about because it is right there on the cover, and that's obviously sort of the only reason that it exists as a story in the first place, is because they wanted to take a classic story and sort of shock people out of complacency by putting a twist on it, and this twist happens to be zombies. Question number one, does the gimmick serve the story? Is it a good gimmick, or is it just something which is just kind of randomly chosen and doesn't really work? Just there to kind of shock you.
Well, you asking me?
Yeah, and you have to speak up because there's so much sound around today. So.
I think, if that's what you want, I mean, if that's what you're after, right? I mean, it delivered what it was set out to do, because it said, okay, here's Pride and Prejudice, and hear zombies. Now they kind of added some neat stuff. I mean, like, I like the scene where I guess it was the proposal scene where the Darcy and Elizabeth end up fighting each other, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That worked. That was fun, and that was, you know, that worked well because, in other words, it wasn't all just hacking away at zombies, because that you can only do that for so much and for so long, and so that I thought that was fun, and those little type of twists made it more enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, it, like I said, for what it set out to do, I think it accomplished that fairly well. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, they made one with Abraham Lincoln and zombies, right?
Yeah, yeah, but that's not really, I guess it's an original story.
Yeah, but still, I mean, there seems to be this
tendency
to try to do the zombie-ized movies, right?
Yeah, kind of trend right now.
Or stories, or, and I'm not sure I get that whole thing, but yeah, it was fun for what it was.
Yeah, I think that, and I think that, again, it does what it says on the tin, but for me, it kind of felt like the whole movie was sort of a missed opportunity, in that, well, if it was a good idea in the first place, I think there are ways that it could have worked better, that, because the gimmick, which is to say zombies, if you're going to take a classic story and use some sort of unusual and gimmick to change it dramatically, then I think that you have to be careful that you don't just choose something just random. You have to choose something which enhances the story in some way, or that makes it, that serves it, and serves to tell the story in a good way. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, was sort of the difference between, and this has to do with adaptations that do that, is like Shakespeare adaptations that will set Shakespeare in modern times, which is the gimmick at the center of the plot. It's obviously not what Shakespeare intended. It's kind of one major change, but sometimes it serves a story, and sometimes it's just a distraction. For instance, one of my favorite Shakespeare adaptations is the David Tennant version of Hamlet from a few years ago, and I think a good part of it is available on YouTube, if not the whole thing. But it's set in a modern, very kind of technocratic, if that's the right word, palace, and Patrick Stewart plays King Claudius, and he's a very wealthy and prosperous king of a small country, and you know a lot of the story is framed through security cameras, and it's kind of, Hamlet is really paranoid anyway, but a lot of the security cameras will like be watching Hamlet all the time, and it's that really like reflects kind of his fear that he's being watched, that he's that he can't, that all the political stuff, and it updates pretty well as a modern story. There's some stuff which doesn't work, but they did a lot of things which kind of showed the story in a slightly new light, but it also served it. It reflected the themes of the story, and it wasn't there just to distract you, just to try and make it more interesting, I guess, but it really did fit in pretty well. Another of my favorite things about that, before we leave, is that when you see the ghost of Patrick Stewart walking around looking creepy and everything, he's walking around and he's walking towards the guards, and I don't think you actually even see him, because the camera's looking at the guards. No, you do see him, but then when it cuts to the security cameras, the main camera is looking through the security cameras, you just see the guards swatting at empty air. And so I think, as I recall, that was one of my favorite bits. Though my favorite ghost scene is still the scene with Paul Scofield in Mel Gibson's Hamlet. It's just terrific because it's so basic. But anyway, we're getting off on Hamlet now. Another Pride and Prejudice adaptation, for instance, is Bride and Prejudice, which the central gimmick in that is that it takes place in India and it's a musical. It's basically a Bollywood Pride and Prejudice, though it's not quite so. It's fairly anglicized when it comes to Bollywood stuff. Shorter and it's more adapted to Western audiences, and it's in English.
You know, the Bridget Jones Diary was an adaptation.
It was, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't an adaptation so much as it was very obviously influenced by it. I don't think that I would put it as an adaptation. Maybe, now, and that brings up, of course, the difference between, we were talking about parodies and pastiches. So, a parody, or a pastiche is an artistic work in a style that imitates that of another work, artist, or period. And a parody is an imitation of a style or of a particular writer, artist, or genre with deliberate exaggeration for comic effect. So if I were to do
a painting, a reproduction of another artist's painting and tried to sell it, you'd call it a pastiche instead of a fake, that would be okay?
Well, it would be okay, as long as your name was on the bottom, and you know, you probably wouldn't be able to I mean, it's just a word. And pastiche does mean that it's not written by the original author.
And it's just fun to say.
It's a lot more fun than fake.
Waiter, I'll have the pastiche, please.
Or copy. Yeah, waiter, you know, I'd like the pastiche, and can you put some cheese on that? So, then there's kind of this particular modernizing adaptation thing, which is popular right now. Pride and Prejudice has had so many adaptations over the years that it's really a big topic to cover. Lizzie Bennet Diaries from a few years ago, I actually watched those as they were coming out, which was a YouTube adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, which was framed as Lizzie Bennet's blog, video blog, and she's talking about her life and how awful this Mr. Darcy is that she's just met, and so on and so forth. And it's, of course, modernized, and it was pretty good, The whole video blog thing worked well because it reflected Lizzie's tendency to only see her own point of view, to kind of be telling the story from her point of view, and you can kind of question exactly how much of the truth she's telling, and there were a lot of things that with that adapted pretty well to a modern world, But yeah, so the main gimmick in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is, of course, the zombies. And that brings up the question of, what do zombies add to the story of Pride and Prejudice? Do they add anything? Could they add anything? And, of course, that might seem like a silly question to ask, but there were a few parts of it where I could kind of see it working. Overall, I didn't think the movie worked. I thought that it had brief glimpses of kind of what it could be, but it just didn't meld, and all in all, it's
kind of a tall order to get a lot of art out of that.
Well, I'm not saying it had to be art necessarily, but I think that it could have been fun. I mean, if you're going to make a movie about Pride and Prejudice and zombies, then the first thing
should have just been a parody then? Should it have just been like Shaun of the Dead and really funny?
Well, I think it could have been more funny. But I think that a good way...
Took itself too serious?
Yes, it did. That's I think, my biggest problem is that they delivered several really cringy pieces of dialogue, like, you know, the zombies will be coming in a few hours if Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy don't get back. And, you know, it's just like, you can't deliver a line like that without a little bit of self-awareness that it's a bad line.
It could have been pretty funny that way.
Yeah, there would have been a great, you know, if there'd been a little bit of a kind of a wink to the audience, like Mr. Bennet would have been great at this, for instance. And poor Charles Dance, he was underused. But he could have, you know, said, oh, well, you know, one simply must take care of the zombies because that is what one does when one is British. And sort of a really dry black comedy.
Yeah.
And I think that would have worked because the book itself, Pride and Prejudice, is very funny.
Well, and you kind of saw that a little bit, like I said earlier, when they were doing the proposal scene.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
It was funny.
Yeah.
And that was funny and quirky and all.
And furthermore, the central conceit that Lizzie and Darcy are both zombie-killing hunters, you know, that they can fight, and that conceit worked in the scene because they converted what was in the original novel, a verbal conflict into a physical conflict in an intelligent and interesting way.
Yeah.
And that served the story. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, is that when you have a major change in styles like that, then I think it's great if you can take it and use that to further the basic themes of the story, even if the technicalities or the physical elements of the story are changed. If it serves the story, then it works. And so that was largely why I enjoyed that scene. I enjoyed just some of the bits where you can kind of see that working as a reflection of what was going on in the characters' arcs and their storylines emotionally. But zombies. That's kind of what I wanted to talk about. With zombies, what are zombies movies about? Why are they so popular? Why do we keep coming back to them if we do? And I can't say I do a whole lot because I'm not a huge zombie movie fan. But what is there about them? And what zombie movies? What attracts us about zombie movies? Why do we like to watch movies about people killing a bunch of monsters?
I guess we like to see evil defeated, right?
Yeah.
And
of course, with a lot of zombie movies, a lot of the time it'll end with the zombies winning.
And I don't know. At our base, we like to see evil defeated in a very powerful way, right? A very
visceral, final,
once and for all way. And zombies give you the chance to do that by hacking them to pieces and not having the guilt. You're actually doing them a favor because you're making the undead dead, I guess, or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that, you know, we talked about this earlier, is that movie makers try to, you know, that you're fighting robots, or you're fighting stormtroopers, these faceless characters that don't have any real life. And so you can, even Nazis, you know, I mean, okay, let's kill all the Nazis we can, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
And so we try to kind of cover that up, and zombies, I think, fits into that very well. Is that you don't have to worry about any emotional baggage of worrying about your conscience of these undead being chopped up. That's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, it feels like very much, I guess, consequences free killing, and just something kind of to enjoy in and of itself.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying it's a good thing necessarily, because...
And I don't know, I mean, I'm not a huge zombie movie fan, so I can't speak very intelligently about the genre as a whole. I think that it probably, and this is just a guess, but it probably works better when it's less about just killing the zombies and more about, you know, some of the problem solving of trying to figure out how to combat zombies, how to get away from the zombies, you know. If Jurassic Park were just, you know, chopping up dinosaurs all day long, then it wouldn't be very interesting. But the problem solving elements and the ways that they try to avoid the monsters, you know, that kind of elevates it to something more interesting and more entertaining.
Well, and I'll say this about it, and now that I think about it, something I guess I don't like, and this maybe flashed across my mind when it happened in the movie, is like when I forget the even character's name, but basically one of the ladies at one of the dinners, she comes up behind Elizabeth and she's getting ready to tell her something, and her head, you know, somebody, Darcy blows her head off or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, that was Mrs. So-and-so, you know. Well, you know,
And I wanted to mention that, is that this movie really sends kind of mixed messages about whether the zombies can be redeemed or not.
Right. I mean,
Yeah, that bothered me.
And I have no problem with it being that they can't be redeemed and they've got to be killed, but let's show a little remorse.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to humanize the zombies to the extent to which they do, then figure out, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't have zombies that may or may not go to church and have a slightly weird cult.
And I'm not trying to look too much into this. Like I said, it's not. I don't think it's its purpose. It was purpose to be kind of this.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think that it's something that they delve into as a major plot point is the idea of, and it's they're trying to update the central theme of the book from Mr. Darcy's prejudice against people of lower class to his prejudice against people who may or may not have been bitten by zombies or something, or he's just really paranoid about people, and because he's seen all these horrors and he's yada yada yada, and he had to kill his own father thanks to George Wickham, and because Wickham managed to bite his father and turn him into a zombie or something. And so they're trying to update one of the book's central themes and turn it into that, into this distrust of zombies instead of distrust or dislike of people, socially inferiors. So it's a big theme, and the way that they deal with it is therefore important. And so Wickham's plea for zombies as redeemable is important, it feels like. And frankly, he makes a really good case. I was thinking, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, if is there any way that we can actually work with these zombies? You know, well, I'm serious. I mean, based on the evidence that they present, for instance, in the story of, okay, there are zombies that are sitting in church dressed like, you know, little girls, and they're giggling like girls, you know. They seem human. They don't seem like monsters.
But they want to eat your brain.
Well, I know, but... Or do they? I mean, that's the question, is that from the evidence in the movie, it implies at first that there may be a chance of redemption there, and then it just completely drops that. It doesn't just drop it as untrue, it drops it almost with the idea that you shouldn't even think that.
I mean, do you think Hillary Clinton could be a zombie?
Well, I mean, that would
explain a lot of things.
That probably would. That this entire election, if we're going to start pointing out people being zombies in this election, then I think we'll probably not run into too many that aren't. There's a shorter list of living politicians than there are zombie politicians. But somebody actually mentioned this the other day, about this movie, is that it kind of sets up zombies as a social other, a group of people, and then it says, okay, maybe they are redeemable. Maybe, you know, maybe we should at least try to redeem them, you know, because,
no, we just need to kill them off.
Hack them to pieces, you know, and that you can't trust a zombie ever, you know, and that just kind of bugs me as a message to send, because, I mean, I don't mind inhuman zombies, and I know that there are all these kind of cheesy movies that try and take a monster and humanize it, and, oh, it's just been misunderstood all this time and stuff. The second Jurassic Park movie tried to do that, and it wasn't successful. It tried to take the dinosaurs and make them misunderstood, and, you know...
That's what they did with the Terminator, too.
Exactly. And that doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
But even though I think that that's kind of wimpy and annoying...
Well, I say Terminator because we saw the tail end of that movie while we were at the hotel.
Yeah, yeah. And so, even though that annoys me, I would rather it just be evil dinosaurs than evil zombies rather than, okay, these zombies are zombies who go to church, and maybe we should think about that before we slaughter them. But then it turns out, oh, it's okay, let's just slaughter them anyway. They're just part of a cult. So I just, it feels like dangling that as a possibility from a character who we're supposed to hate just feels kind of dishonest and conflicting, you know? Because he actually makes sense. I mean, his case that he makes sort of makes sense. I mean, you know, within the boundaries of a admittedly ridiculous fantasy world.
I agree.
So what do you think, Sam? You wanted to chip in? My brother wanted to... He thought that the zombies were a metaphor for Muslims. And that's also kind of what made me think of it, is that we have this tendency to think of people in groups and then just dehumanize them completely. And I know that's a sort of wimpy sentiment, but it's not really helpful, I think, to anybody in any situation to just... to not only think of people... of a group of monsters as or just or to think of humans as monsters. I think that, and that's it. That's what I would say, is that I don't have any problem with monsters being monsters, but if you're trying to make the monsters humans and then kind of make a persuasive case that they are human and then hack them to pieces anyway, it just feels uncomfortable. It doesn't feel like this. I don't know. It feels like that subplot really.
Well, yeah,
you know,
I mean, but there's a lot of, but that goes back to that movies struggle with that a lot, or at least it used to. That when you kill somebody, even if they're the enemy, they die in earnest. I mean, they don't want to die, and they don't.
Yeah.
They died fighting for whatever. I mean, they may have been on the wrong side. Maybe a Nazi. They may have been a Nazi, you know?
Yeah.
And they may have been all in on that, but they died in earnest, and they died. And that's something to be, I wouldn't say revered, but it's something that you need to be careful with. Movies, it's not entertainment.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be used as entertainment. I don't think.
Okay, killing Nazis in, like, you know, 1940s movies.
I enjoy that as much as the next one. Believe me, I'm not saying I'm above that. I'm just saying that I know that Chip Ingram has hit me a couple times with what he says about similar stuff like that. Is that we sit around and we watch people kill other people for entertainment on TV.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to think, is that a good thing to do? You know.
Yeah, and I think that it's important in that how that violence is handled. We were talking about. There's a really good video on Nerdwriter on YouTube channel Nerdwriter about this, how movies handle violence and how it can be used in different ways and more intelligently in some cases than in others. And he was talking about how, you know, it's important if you're going to have really gruesome violence, if you're going to have not just, you know, Indiana Jones punches a Nazi and he falls over it off a cliff. You know, which is just, it's pretty innocent stuff. You know, it's not really inviting you to just glory in really gruesome and nasty violence. That's one thing. But if you're going to really gruesomely kill people that have been sort of humanized in the story, then you need to handle that more carefully. You need to handle it more respectfully. And so that's my problem. It's not so much that with the zombies that... And it feels kind of ridiculous to be talking about zombies and say, oh, they've been humanized, and la 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 la. But there were...
Zombies unite.
Yeah, but there were some kind of eerily humanizing scenes in this movie, and it was really, you know, going after that and talking about it, and they were taking communion, for goodness sakes. We need to invite these people to the church potluck. Yeah, it's just my southern hospitality coming out. So anyway, I just thought that was... It just really didn't kind of work for me. Especially since we're supposed to hate Wickham for trying, you know. It turns out that anybody who wants to reconcile has been a zombie all the time. They're like, okay, that doesn't... Yeah, that's pushing it a bit far. Not that I don't think that the tendency to...
Well, you gotta ask, was he sincere about it, right?
Yeah.
Or was he just using that?
Yeah, and it just feels really cynical to have the only character in the movie who's trying to come up with reconciliation turn out to be a bad guy. But, you know, that's probably all that there is.
But, you know, that's what Darth Vader did. He's like, you know, okay, look, Luke, you know, you and I can rule the galaxy. We can defeat the Emperor, right?
Oh, I will say, though, this is the first Wickham that I've actually kind of liked in a movie, because he seemed pretty charming, you know. Most of the Wickhams, I immediately you can tell he's a sleazeball, but this guy, he seemed fairly sane, you know. He seemed fairly interesting, and maybe it was just because the Mr. Darcy in this is basically dark, you know, he was trying to do his best Batman impersonation. I really don't know what he was going for with this, like Batman meets Zombie Hunter. But
he did the lake scene.
He did do the lake scene, and you know, that's another thing which I thought should have been funny, but they kind of played it as really kind of grim and serious. And I'm like, this ought to be hilarious, you know? Because the idea is so absurd that you could just have so much fun with it.
Yeah, he could have walked up to the lake, you know, unbuttoned his shirt or whatever, and then turned around and walked off or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that would have been really funny. And stuff like that, you know, just a little bit winking at the audience saying, okay, you know, there are fun things we can do with this, but it's also
could have been
really,
Frozen. Yeah. Could have been cool.
Yeah, accidentally drop in a frozen lake, or you know, the lake's only like
six inches
deep. That would have been funny.
Just wades around and it splashes his feet.
Yeah, you know, and that would have been fun, because if you're going to have a lake scene in any other Pride and Prejudice, you really can't take it seriously, because
yeah, you're right.
Everybody's kind of snickering about it, because everybody knows the other scene. But just before we leave the topic of violence as a kind of as a metaphor in the story, I think that a more interesting way to include violence in a Pride and Prejudice story, which would have, I think, worked better than this particular style of violence, would have been to turn it into a swashbuckler film. Pride and Prejudice and Pirates. That would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Because it wouldn't have been as grim, because they took the whole zombie thing pretty seriously. I know that, you know, zombie movies are supposed to be sort of ridiculously serious, but Shaun of the Dead, for instance, does that really well. It's really funny, but it also got a good bit of a pathos out of the situation, especially near the end. That would have worked really well, but even so, I think swashbuckling would have been better, because Pride and Prejudice, by definition, is there's so much of the story which is about social restraint and decorum that this particular form of zombie hunting just kind of removes any form of subtlety that might be in the story. I think that was a little bit difficult to translate, and it tended to work better when you had like the scene where Darcy proposes and they end up in a sword fight, because that really reflects the tensions between them and kind of you know, the way that the story had shaped up, and they were both, you know, even in the original story, it's a fight. I mean, it is a fight. This just happens to visualize it and imagine it, yeah, in an engaging and interesting way, and the violence serves the story. So I think that would have been so much fun if they ended up being pirates or something. You know, had a lot of swashbuckling scenes, and Elizabeth could have been kind of this steampunk hero who, oh, I don't know, but it would have been fun. And you know, and again, I'm just kind of thinking of ways in which I think you could take this a premise like this and make it fun, because this movie felt like it could have been a lot of fun. You know, it's an absurd idea. Okay, how can we do this in a way that makes it fun? And it just missed some opportunities, you know. Like, they tended to deliver a lot of the dialogue straight when they probably should have been doing it a little bit more with a wink, you know. But, yeah, so that brings me to kind of the more technical aspects of the movie, which is to say, the cast. Because even though I think the dialogue and the script tends to fail them, when you have a really good cast and some Jane Austen dialogue in there, just enough to really give it a little bit of oomph, that tends to help a lot. You know, how did you think the cast did? Or, you know,
well, they did okay. I mean, they were.
I
hate to use the word, but they were. Unremarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't jump off the screen.
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know, the chemistry didn't exactly work, but it didn't not work. I mean, it just was just kind of vanilla.
Yeah. Can you think of any standouts or?
No. I don't think so. I mean, you have a soft spot for dance and Matt Smith, right?
Yeah.
You know, but not really. I mean,
I was kind of thinking about it as I was going through it. I'm like, which one of these characters, which one of these actors would I find interesting if this were just a straight version of Pride and Prejudice? you know, because I thought that Jane was real. I didn't remember Jane at all. Bingley, poor Douglas Booth, I guess his name is. I really think he's fairly unremarkable, and he's gotten everywhere he's turned up on his face because he's so pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been interesting to see how they would have handled it if it had been a spoof, yeah. Been a funny, you know. The,
yeah.
Because I think they would have done quite well.
Yeah, and if the writing had been funnier,
yes.
The writing had some funny moments, but it wasn't as clever and funny as it really could have been. It could have been really funny.
Yeah.
You know, there are just so many.
There were
dry British ways that one could deal with zombies.
Was there a book on this? I mean,
it was based on a novel, and I wonder
what
it
is. So,
yeah.
You know, I guess they were trying to kind of keep that.
Yeah.
Keep that, you know, it didn't.
And I wonder what the differences were, because I really didn't have time to look that up and compare them. But, like, you know, so Lily James, who played Elizabeth, I thought she was okay. I mean, she had enough spunk to really kind of, to be a leading heroine, but she didn't.
They should have let Neil Gaiman write the screenplay.
Yeah, well, that would have been interesting.
That would have been fun.
I mean, basically, they should just let Neil Gaiman. He could fix anything, though.
Yeah.
You know, you can give him any bad script, and he'll turn it into something interesting.
Yeah.
But I think she was okay. The guy who played Mr. Darcy, it wasn't working for me.
He was doing what he told to do.
Well, there wasn't enough complexity to the character as written he didn't add enough complexity to really make it work. For instance, Colin Firth was very minimalistic with what he did, but he just had just enough expression to really make it come to life.
Well, you know, there's a group of people out there that have never seen or have never read the book.
Yeah.
And have never seen, like, the 1995 version or any version. This is their first exposure of Pride and Prejudice.
Yes, my friend at school, this was her first experience.
And I cannot imagine what they take away from this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
I would imagine that it feels for them like a kind of sort of clever Jane Austen. A clever and real. Because it has the advantage of having a bunch of Jane Austen dialogue in it.
Most people like us that see it know these characters so well, and we know the storyline so well.
Yeah, it's
you could
really
drop us.
Yeah.
You could have dropped us in the middle of this, just about anywhere, and we would have picked right up with it.
Yeah. And it's always hard for me to accept Pride and Prejudice adaptations.
Right.
Other than the 95 version, because I grew up with it. So.
But it's.
Yeah.
I just think it's. It would really mess some people up that see this alone, cold.
Yeah, my friend Christina had seen it cold, so I can't imagine what her impression of Pride and Prejudice is after this.
Right, it'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask her kind of how it compares if we ever watch that. But, because a lot of the actors are just a little bit just kind of mediocre, it loses a lot of the nuance, it loses a lot of some of the kind of finer character details because they're so busy fighting zombies.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that's their fault. I mean,
that's true.
Because, like, I don't know how they do this. I'm not a cinematographer or a director or anything, but, you know, it seems to me like directors kind of go in close to the face when they really want a lot of expression and heart, you know. Well, they wouldn't let them do that. They didn't do that because it's not that kind of movie. But what kind of movie is it? You know,
it feels sort of totally inconsistent.
Yeah, you want me to take this serious or not?
Yeah, especially the ending, because this is an essentially ridiculous idea, and if you're going to have a scene of Lizzie on a bridge and Mr. Darcy may or may not have been blown up, and oh dear, and I mean, you can't play that straight. You just can't. And the Bennet sisters and Bingley and Darcy on a bridge facing the next great zombie invasion, and Wickham may or may not be the Antichrist. Oh my goodness. I mean, that could be really funny if somebody were, but they don't realize it's really funny.
Well, what would have been great is for Darcy to bend the zombie.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
You know?
And then
she gets bit, she becomes a zombie, and they go off to their, zombie land or whatever.
But they have to learn to overcome their prejudice against zombies or something.
That
would have sort of utilized the ideas better, too.
And then he was so arrogant looking down on zombies, but he was one himself. You know?
Yeah, that would be really funny, you know. And so things like that, you know, just things that sort of subvert your expectations about that sort of thing, because it was pretty predictable. I mean, Wickham, the only part that I was really curious about exactly how it would turn out was Wickham's whole subplot with the zombie invasion, because I'm like, okay, this is different. I don't really see where this is going to go. I would have liked to have seen more of Charles Dance as Mr. Bennett, because I think he could have been a pretty interesting Mr. Bennett.
Yeah,
Mrs.
Agree.
Bennett, I thought she was not all that funny, but I did kind of approve that they had cast somebody who was kind of pretty, because I was thinking, you know, Mr. Bennett was supposed to have fallen in love with her at some point because she was pretty. So,
well, I will say this,
I thought that was a good decision.
You know, getting Pride and Prejudice, just getting that whole storyline in a regular length movie is difficult enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Minus the zombies, yeah.
Minus the zombies. That's just hard enough to try to get all that storyline in there and all the characters and develop the characters and all that.
Yeah.
And then throw in zombies. It's just, oh my gosh. And a bunch of action scenes and, you know.
It took me a while to get into the pacing, but it did work pretty well as it was starting to kind of, I thought it sort of settled in as it went along. And maybe, you know, that partly it's just me because it's hard to watch these and not feel like it's going too fast because I'm used to the TV series.
Right.
But it felt like it kind of settled into itself as it went along. Maybe it was a little bit too long. But pacing was a little bit all over the place. And the tone, of course, the ending felt kind of absurdly sunny after all of it, everything that they'd been through. Style-wise, any comments on the kind of the style of the film or?
Yeah. I mean, the sets and the costumes and all that good stuff was good. I don't remember the music. I don't remember from.
Nothing remarkable about the music. The zombies were, you know.
Although I think
zombies.
Like you said earlier, I think you could have dropped the music from Pirates of the Caribbean in there pretty well, and it would have fit.
And that would have been fun too. You know, kind of give it a bit of a rollicking forward momentum. And the zombies, you know, they used them fairly well. They had a few kind of jump scare moments. There weren't any really, really well staged zombie bits. The zombie in the woods with the baby, that was creepy. We never really understood about that. Yeah, that annoyed me because I was like, okay. Well,
I thought that was going to kept coming. I kept thinking that was going to come back around. That Jane was really a zombie now, and we're going to do it.
Or I was expecting it to kind of tie into the whole maybe zombies are actually kind of human line, because he was a zombie with a baby, and that was kind of what unnerved me a little bit. I was like, okay, that looks creepy. Are we supposed to think, okay, these are zombies are having children and they're creating life and all that?
Zombie babies?
Yeah, you know, zombie babies. Ah, oh no. But that seemed like a sort of perverse idea that they never really went anywhere with. I don't know. So I was kind of curious as to why that was dropped, but they never explained it, and they never really satisfactorily explained whether Jane was a zombie or not.
But this is, you know, and just as a real side note, is that, you know, one thing that I kind of wanted to look up more on and find out a little bit more about is, you know, whenever we have a mass shooting or particularly one that's not necessarily related to Islam, i.e. Virginia Tech. Okay, that's where I went to college, and so I know about Virginia Tech. But, you know, you got these young guys that kill zombies all day long on their computer, right?
Yeah.
They kill these faceless, nameless, they take out their aggression, or seem to, their aggression on these unpeople. They're just digital people. And everybody says, oh, well, that's okay. You know, that's all right. There's no harm done there. And maybe there isn't, but it seems to me like, again,
like there might be some desensitization.
That it's just not a good thing to do.
Yes and no. I mean, people talk about that a lot, and a lot of,
if they talked about that as much as they did about gun control.
Yeah.
But you don't hear that from the left.
I really do think you hear a lot about it, though.
I don't.
I mean, especially if you're a young person, is that all these video games, they're turning people into kind of, you know.
Into zombies?
Yes, into zombies. Well, there's been a lot of research done on it, and I really don't think there's too much in it.
Maybe.
But
I don't know if I buy that. anyway.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, I feel like there are probably more factors than just video games in these things.
I'll say this. I think that there are, just like most things like that, there's young people, that, or there's not necessarily young people. I mean, there are people that take it too far.
Yeah.
But I do think that young males are especially
prone
or, you know, sensitive to that. There's a window there of age where they're trying to figure a lot of things out, and that you drop this in there and let them feel that power and you know, that they can be superhuman and get back, you know, take their aggression out, you know, get back against all these people that are doing them wrong. I don't know. It's,
yeah, but I'm, on the other hand, it's kind of a way of doing it without actually doing it. So that's true. I think it's the same point you can be made about movies, is that that's why it's important the way we frame violence in movies, because it teaches us to think about violence in specific ways and not mindless ways, I guess. And again, it's the sort of thing where you can watch a movie where somebody shoots them up, and you're not gonna, that doesn't mean that you're going to go shoot up a mall or something, because people are free to think and to you know, they're not just puppets that a movie can turn bad automatically. It's not just a switch you can turn, but it is important to think about what you put in your head, about how it shapes your thinking, about how what movies you make, what movies you consume, shape your thinking. So it's important. I think it's not something that that we should give undue credit to for the evil that already lurks in human hearts.
I agree. I just think that, as I said when I started that, I'd like to find out more about it.
Yeah. Okay. Before we leave the cast too, I wanted to point out that I think Matt Smith is a pretty inspired piece of casting for Mr. Collins, and yeah. I would love to see him in a real version of Pride and Prejudice. He did okay in this. I mean, the writing was kind of, some of his lines felt a little bit flat, and he delivered them pretty well, but the lines just weren't working. But he seemed to be having a lot more fun than anybody else in the room. Just, you know, coming in with his old Lady Catherine de Bourgh, so wonderful, and that's not quite as ridiculous in this, because she really is quite a kick butt person. But his whole the scene where he's dancing with Lizzie is really fun, and it's really different than a lot of the ways that I've seen it adapted, of him just being a complete idiot on the dance floor. In this, he thinks that he's Michael Jackson. I mean, he's out there. He just thinks that he's an amazing dancer, and he's overdoing it completely. Which is a really neat twist on Mr. Collins being a bad dancer, is that he thinks that he's great, and he's overdoing it. It's really funny. And so he's funny. He's obviously enjoying himself, and that's kind of more of a tone that I wish the movie had taken. He's just kind of sort of hanging around the edges, having some fun. There was something else I wanted to say about that, but I can't think of it. Oh, and when he does propose to Lizzie, that was a fun scene, and he just looks utterly dejected when she walks out. So he's sitting there, and he was a lot of fun, but he was one of the bright points in the movie. But he was good. I thought Lily James could have been good. Maybe she was okay.
Who is she?
Elizabeth. Okay. She had enough spunk to kind of pull the part off, but
she did. Yeah.
Charles Dance was okay. And again, Mr. Wickham, I was going to say that I thought he did a pretty good Mr. Wickham, all in all. He seemed like a pretty nice, trustworthy guy. A little bit sleazy, maybe. You couldn't really trust him. But overall, he just seemed like a sort of basically good, decent fellow.
Yeah.
And you could kind of see him being able to convince somebody like Lizzie that he was a decent guy. The whole subplot with Lydia felt really tacked on, because they didn't have enough time to develop Lydia. I never even remembered which of the younger girls she was.
Yeah.
So I was like, Lydia, who's Lydia?
But they had to kind of drop some story.
Yeah, they did. And Charlotte too, of course. course, when she turns up and says, yes, I'm going to marry Mr. Collins, you're like, Charlotte, who's Charlotte? And because she had one line, like one speaking line before that. And so you kind of have to be familiar with the story to really follow what's going on.
Right.
But anyway, there were moments that I enjoyed and things. It just, you know, all in all felt like there maybe some different directions might have improved the story. If indeed the story was a good idea in the first place. I think that's pretty much all I have. There were, of course, a lot of themes in Pride and Prejudice that the movie really kind of glosses over that we didn't have a huge chance to talk about. But that's, you know, that it's a zombie movie with Pride and Prejudice. So you can't expect too much, I guess. But Pride and Prejudice, you know, if you enjoyed this, Pride and Prejudice is kind of an adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, which I think kind of works a little bit better. It also has its very ridiculous moments. Like, there was a scene where Darcy and Lalita, Lizzie, are out on the beach, and like this random African choir turns up and just starts singing, and that was kind of wacky. But aside from a few of those moments, that I thought that was that movie did a pretty good job of updating some of the novel's conflicts to a modern setting in a way which was interesting and just updated it well, modernized it well. Overall, I mean, I enjoyed the movie okay. I just felt like there were things that perhaps should have been changed.
That's hard to do. I mean, it's hard.
It is hard.
They are very good. I mean, we ought to do that sometime, is look at spoofs that work or parodies that really work.
We need to do one on Galaxy Quest sometime. I'm now becoming a Star Trek fan. I've at last been dragged into being a Trekkie. So I'm starting to kind of appreciate that world and stuff, and I need to go back and watch Galaxy Quest now that I know what it's making fun of. But I thought that movie really worked well, both as a parody and a pastiche, sort of writing in the style of Star Trek, but also kind of making fun of it, and also sort of being a tribute to it.
At the hotel this weekend, there was Robin Hood, Men in Tights was on as well.
Yeah, speaking
and
of spoofs.
I couldn't watch but a couple minutes at a time. It was just so terrible, you know.
Yeah, and that one feels like one that really doesn't have much respect for the source material. And I will give Pride and Prejudice and Zombies this, is that, you know, and I came in with kind of high expectations, I guess, and that was probably one of my problems, is that if I'd come in expecting it to be awful, I probably would have liked it better. But it did show a respect for its source material, and that it used that language, and it incorporated the language in, and that gave it some style that it needed.
You think the Star Wars Christmas special respected its original material?
Let's not even talk about that. That could be our exit music, the scene where Princess Leia sings the lyrics of the Star Wars theme. Oh my gosh, it's awful. Anyway, I think we're just going to have to end with the theme music from the Pride and Prejudice.
Yes, that would be good.
Yeah. With regards to parodies, I guess there's really only one question to ask, and that is, for what do we exist? But to make sport for our neighbors and laugh at them in our turn.